There will be no weariness of the body, no flagging of the soul's energies. Your powers will be forever fresh and strong for whatever service you may be permitted to perform. And the years will not be whiled away in idleness. The same law governs here, and there will be a work assigned you. Now, my brothers, there is set before you an object worthy of the aim and efforts of immortal minds. There is nothing to which you can compare these spiritual things. Comparisons are made, but they all fail to reach the reality. The sun breaking through the clouds and flooding the earth with light, the day chasing away the darkness of the night, waking from a long and exhausting sleep, rising from the grave and bounding into a vigorous life. Spirits are all missionary beings, whatever may be the position they occupy in regard to the extension in your world, they are all ministering spirits. Sent forth to minister to those on earth. Spiritual Journeys. J. H. Pratt. You, dear friends, have no idea yet of the great speed we use in traveling in our world. After I came to our dear friends over here, they took me on various journeys. One I remember was to the Temple of the Eastern Adepts. Here we learned a great many things which never come to earth, as the principles of these great teachings are far above the boundaries of earth. We saw demonstrated the oft-repeated story of the materialization of trees, verdure and luscious fruits such as we had often heard was occurring in the far east of earth's realms. I very much enjoyed these things, but above all, the calm peaceful association of the wonderful adepts most appealed to me. On earth my friends will remember of me, that I was always of a purely investigating turn of mind in the interests of science and truth, and so all the spiritual knowledge which I have gained over here has been of untold value to me. I soon learned how to meet and throw off and on the different auras that I would meet in making the many journeys that I was constantly learning was such a benefit to me. Within the twinkling of an eye, a spirit who knows how, can make a journey of several millions of earthly miles. I have also been present at many of the meetings of the different delegations of the Star Circle, and I would that I could unfold before you each of their sacred laws, for if I could you would forever understand more of the reality of love, of truth and of light than ever before. But that is at present impossible, as my space and time are limited, but I am told that this new book will do a world of good, and we would that others might be written after this, for the knowledge of spirit is sometimes almost limitless. With this little message, I wish to express my sincere friendship for Edward Butler, for E.J. Silgus, for all the Earth Circle, the Heavenly Star Circle, and to their medium, William Wallace Abba. My love to my wife, Josephine. Prenatal influences. Dr. Reed. Friends, genius is such a rarity that ordinary mortals have come to think it is a direct gift from God, bestowed on some favored child without merit or regard for any law. One child in a family is mild, sweet-tempered and lovable, the other children, disagreeable, hateful and quarrelsome. Instead of seeking for the cause of these differences, people put the matter into the unknowable and go on, seemingly without thinking that it is just as easy to raise a Lincoln as a Booth, when the laws of nature are understood and observed. If both or either of the parents are in bondage to a habit they do not wish transmitted to the child, such habits must be given up, and especially the love of them. Do you wish a child that will love nature as it is, and live a pure life, with every energy of the soul, mind and body, you must love and obey nature's laws, and by this grace live strictly continent lives, in thought as well as in deed. During the full period of gestative influence, there should be no sexual congress between husband and wife. This is nature's law, and outside of this law it is violated. Animals will not permit it, savages do not practice it. Friends, if you wish to know why your children are disobedient and impure, we answer, you disobeyed nature's laws during the period of transmitted influence. It need not have been done in deeds of impurity, impure thoughts and desires are sufficient for the evil. Those who desire obedient children, whether they profess spiritualism or not, should obey nature's laws, and spiritual laws being obedient, bring children of the utmost merit. If they live in such obedience, they will be worthy to command their children, and will secure their love and respect. No matter what state of grace the parents have attained, if they give way to improper feelings, or cherish base desires, rather than the higher nature to govern during the period under consideration, such transgressions will as surely mar the child's character. The tobacco habit is often transmitted by tobacco-using parents, and the children will take to its use naturally. It is the same with the appetite for whiskey. Friends, the mother must be careful during the important period, for a simple craving for stimulants may cause the development of an imbecile, or an improper appetite in the innocent child. A craving for certain articles of food or drink is common to the prospective mother, and when such things are not justly considered evil, they should be gratified. But when impracticable, impossible or evil, greater good, both to mother and child, will result in overcoming them. This can be done by appealing to your spirit friends to aid you by placing your mind upon them and other ideas. If the parents are given to prevarication and exaggeration, they must stop, and cultivate habits of sincerity and truthfulness, otherwise the child may be born a liar. To avoid each and all of these being confined in the child, cultivate harmony, love and spirituality. The less important part of prenatal conditions, which may be properly called the law of nature, the law of genius, is that by which an adaptedness for a certain profession or trade is transmitted to the child. These laws and the development of natural faculties are as easily known and should be observed as those governing the moral faculties. Friendly greetings from the world. Beautiful. Dr. Barr. This will be, I hope, happily received by all my old Elmwood, can, friends and neighbors. Mr. McCracken comes with me tonight to bless this dear circle. We also visited the Star Circle when the medium, William A. Abba, was located in Spring Hill, can. I have found spirit life much more lovely than I ever supposed it could be, and I have also learned the cause of its great and never-changing beauty. It is the vibration from the uniform thoughts of millions of spirits both in and out of the flesh who are constantly sacrificing for others, and I have learned that the only true and lasting happiness is gained only in doing good to others and striving to make others happier. Thus the great beauty of the spirit world is gained. I suffered a great deal before I left my body on earth, and that suffering for a time rather bound me to my body, and I remained with it until they buried it, and then I was released and came onto this beautiful world. I meet and greet many old and true friends over here, and as we clasp each other's hands in friendly tenderness, we recite over again the recollections and happenings of old. Oh, it is a glorious thing to return after death. The whole world will know after a while, and then greater happiness will reign on the face of the earth. I have attended many wise and greatly good lectures since coming to this new life, and they fill me with a truer, a better and a nobler understanding of spiritualism. My greetings to all my old friends who are yet sojourning in the troubled way. My employment in spirit life. Jenny B. Hagen Jackson. I am most graciously permitted by the Star Circle to give my message for this, the fourth book. I am now a member of the Band of Hope in the spirit world, and it is our mission to go into the realms of darkness and try to lift those who are in the shadows, up into the greater light of the spheres. Many are almost hopeless, but we are never tiring in our varied efforts to raise them and secure for them the blessed life of a higher and a brighter existence. And also various and numerous are the troublesome dark waves that surround these poor creatures when they first enter spirit life in this state. So we are never idle, but always working for the cause of love and truth. We have raised many thousands of poor fallen spirits up into the light and life of fair hope. And when once they are encompassed by the beams of hope's bright rays, there is no longer any danger of their going backward, but they are instead, ever pushing forward with the zeal born of heavenly truth. When I was on earth, I always tried with all my might to do my duty for the grand cause for which I was laboring, and wherein I fell short, I am trying to make up fully and completely over here. I thought the spiritual was beautiful then, but now am I able to expand and bask, as it were, in the never-changing radiance of the true light of spiritualism, with a fuller understanding, a more profound zeal, a better, and a more unselfish heart. All, That is what I am working so hard to gain, the really unselfish heart. May all the world's people so prepare themselves for the spiritual life, that they may understand almost at once the greater portion of its glory. My love and dearest regards go with the Star Circle. A greeting to friends, a message of truth. George Umstead. I am very glad to be able to come before the circle this evening to give my message of truth. My dear friends, it is not long since I passed to this glorious spirit world, and therefore, I cannot tell you as much of its beauties as when I have sojourned in this wonderful place a while longer. I was very thankful to be released from my bondage of earth, insomuch as I longed to go to this beautiful world, knowing as I did of its manifold blessings. But friends, you of earth may prepare your minds in anticipation for years of the spiritual life, and still you cannot conceive its beauties. Even my brother and sister spiritualists, who all must confess have an advantage, the blessing of knowing, where those of the creeds simply believe, even these dear children of earth only know such a very smattering of the great realities of spiritual life, such a very little of the myriad beauties of this existence, that they are as babes and sucklings. I oftentimes come back to earth and walk by the side of my old friends, Colonel Van Horn and E.J. Silkus, and try to tell them some of the glory of this afterlife, but I think they do not hear me. Someday they will understand. I have met many of my old and very dear friends over here. With my dearest regards, I give this little message for the Star Circle. A greeting to my wife, Henry Griff. To my dear wife, Susie Griff, I dedicate this little message for the fourth book of the series by the Star Circle. I come back across the mystic threshold and stand once more among you, a spirit in your midst, once living in the earthly body, but now in the glorious existence of spirit. I often go to my earthly home and walk in upon my wife and children as they pass their days in the peace and joy of home, and try to impress them with my presence. If they are happy, I am happy, but if they are sad, I am sad. Oftentimes I bring with me hosts of spirits, so that if there be any sickness or ailing in the earthly home, we linger until health has fully returned. I will be waiting to welcome all my loved ones when they come to me over here, waiting to welcome them with never-ending joy and happiness. God bless this Star Circle, knowledge of nature. Faraday. At no period in the history of your world has man been entirely destitute of at least a limited knowledge of spiritual truths. A knowledge of his existence, nature attributes and character must be derived from the book of nature. The philosopher enters the sublime field of nature. Here he contemplates the fragrant flower, purling streams, crystal fountains, blazing lightning and roaring thunder. Then he turns his eyes of amazement and wonder to the tribes of living creatures. From the smallest insect, perceivable only by the microscope, to the largest animal that lives in the forest. From the smallest fish, found in the mountain rivulets, to the great leviathan which baffles with the wild waves of the ocean storm. From the smallest bird to the eagle that wings its flights through the elastic winds and supports itself with its broad pinions on the lofty clouds. And yet all of these wonderful works of nature fail to give man a correct idea of nature's laws. Friends, nature may seem remorseless and exacting, but she is just and stable. He who violates her laws is pursued and punished, but he who obeys, finds them mighty for his protection and comfort. The very stability of nature's laws assures you, cheers you, inspires you. You see in them protection and helpfulness because you work along the line of their unerring operation, instead of working contrary to them. Man's efforts are not paralyzed by fear, but quickened by a hope that amounts to assurance, and claims an interest in all that exists. For you the flowers open their eyes, and the birds swell their morning and evening chorus. You know not how much you owe to these influences, of whose constant presence and ministry you scarcely think, to the prisoner in his solitary cell, and to the imprisoned invalid and his pale watcher. This statement has a meaning and emphasis which the free and strong can only know by the experience of isolation. Yet you have hours of loneliness, or despondency or anger. Have you not sometimes fled from human society to commune with the fields and flowers, the trees and the birds, the brooks and the mountains, the stars and the sea? How this allayed your anger and selfishness, accompanied your lonely soul, bore away your despondency and inspired you with a hopefulness which gave significance and value to your life and work. The solitary flower that grows in the desert, beyond the sight of other vegetation, may seem lost and undesigned. The skeptic may rail at our spiritualism, and sneeringly, ask what purpose it can serve. But a wrong, famishing and disheartened traveler, who has given himself up to die, sees the flower and says, "If the spirits can care for this, they can care for me." Thus do natural objects, both animate and inanimate, speak to us. Many of you feel what you are not gifted to express, your inmost thoughts. This truth suggests certain practical thoughts, which press forward for expression. Some boast of their powers to abstain from ardent spirits, but do you do it? You ask to be honored because you say you can lead a virtuous life, but do you do so? You have the power to govern yourself tonight, but do you keep it from slander and gossip and lying? Do you wish the world to praise you? If you do, leave off telling what you can do, and actually do something which the world needs to have done. Open your purse, your hand, your eye, your ear, your lips, your heart. Let this be the full measure of this power to act in every open field. Attraction is the great law of the universe. It is subject to no change, knows no variation, admits of no exception. Its subtle power fathoms all distances and is felt across all space. It controls all objects, whether atoms or worlds, and with equal ease, it binds a monad, swings a planet or chains a system. Its laws are simple and invariable. Let science contend as to the mode, the facts are plain. Whether it be a power inhering in all matter, or an external power working through matter, the result is the same. There is that in every power that attracts, a power ceaseless, changeless, eternal. This power is impalpable to the touch, invisible to the eye, incognizable by any of the senses, and yet a power that works with tireless energy through all time, bringing order out of confusion, harmony out of discord, and beauty and perfection from the conflicting congeries of the primordial elements. In the realm of the intellect, and of the soul, spirit, this law has its analogies. Here is a universe of intellect, of feeling and of affection. A realm where thoughts, affections, purposes, yearnings, aspirations, will, are the atoms and molecules. With matter the power of attraction is fixed and definite. No atom can change its potency. With spirit, the law is equally inflexible, but spirit has in itself possibilities with which the atom is not acquainted. The spirits advance from feebleness to power. So far as we can see, everything earthly and spiritual is subject to laws. These laws may be unknown, perchance they are, and by you incomprehensible. With them are the mightiest achievements produced. Love is the soul's inspiration, the power that uplifts, ennobles, and saves. That power subtle as thought, is as changeless as truth, lasting as eternity and resistless as nature. Love is the universal, the all-potent power. Such is the principle of spiritualism. Mysteries and unseen forces from the other world. Professor William Denton. Friends, do you know that you are all in the presence of some mysterious force, spirit, which sweeps nations and men to their destiny? It is true, however, that man's attitude toward these mysteries of forces is no longer the same, and in this change of attitude this is one of the most significant points in human history. Every advanced step that science makes, therefore, in explaining the mysteries of nature and the universe, aids man in discovering the mysteries of the mind, and the laws that in their eternal harmony govern all. These connections are not along the orthodox lines, they are between the spirit and the mortal. This scheme is based upon the attuning of receiver to sender. These principles are not along any old line of prayer and fasting as prayers usually go, that these psychic messages, that the scientific world begins to take note of, flash into human souls. The crowning wonder of them is that they commonly appear where least expected, in some ignorant peasant woman, or shepherd girl, perchance, or where some mother is too busy perhaps, for much praying. Some attuning of the receiver that the theologians have not yet mastered, seems essential to the spirit laws. Some better understanding of how to use this agency seems a growing necessity in the case. On one point in the case, there is no longer any question, and that is, that fearless faith in the petitioner is the law of acceptance and potency in any worthy desire of the soul, and it is no illogical position of the teacher who makes these forces in the spiritual world akin to the forces of electricity in the natural world. Look fearlessly upon life and trust the infinite power to come forth, and do what the honest heart may desire, is the way to open all the currents of communication and find peace and joy written in every heart. Your soul is the desire of all the psychic teachers from the spirit world. Life worth living. John Wesley. Friends, your world will never become religious as it has been taught for ages and ages. Men never will take up religious ways that have been handed down from generation to generation, under compulsion, either physical, social, moral or intellectual. It is strange that spiritualism, so long thought of as an unnatural thing, as something which one had considered supernatural instead of regarding it as natural, is the most beautiful and natural way of thinking and living. We have tried earnestly to make spiritualism mean everything, the very light and joy of life. The world needs something that will teach it to lift up its eyes and look forward, to let the dead past bury its dead and to press with joy into the future. The world needs such a view of the eternal and infinite as will bring its own spirit into harmony, peace, and the harmonious gladness of free life in conscious unity with all life. The world needs a religion that will make men enter on their path, take up their burden, live their lives with gladness and confidence, and that will make life's meaning clear and so high that you shall rejoice to live. True spiritualism does not take the dull ways of life, it shows you its glory, takes the humble ways and shows you how high it really is. It takes your lives that seem to wander, often in desert places, and shows you the upspringing ways of refreshment and the still waters that rise in the hills of eternal bliss. Spiritualism ought to bring into the life that now is yours, the essence of harmony and joy which you fondly picture as constituting another world. If it does not give you a heaven within, one that flows out, refreshing from you, it then is false. Friends, how guilty are you if you lead others to think of religion as that which is only dreary, a matter of simple forms, or tedious disputes about words and phrases, devoid of all richness, sweetness, light and power for them, or, as a matter of dull, blind compulsion, of fear and trembling, and if you have robbed them of that which might have made life mean altogether other than it has, you have given them gloom instead of gladness. If you really love your fellows, it is your business to help them to see life in the largest and richest terms possible, to lead them to value their own selves and to select from the vast range of life's opportunities and possibilities the largest value, to show them the way of joy and gladness. Spiritualism is the religion to bring men back to a knowledge of life, as worth living. A message from a spirit wife to her husband on earth. Mrs. Mattie Seymour. My dear husband is still on earth, and so I am glad of the permission of coming to write this for him to be placed in the fourth book of the Star Circle. I am most gloriously happy on this side of life, as I am preparing a home for my loved ones still on earth, that when they come to live in this eternally beautiful world, that we may all be very joyous together. I go often to visit my dear daughter, Josephine, who lives in New York City, and also her lovely little daughter. I am caring for her spirit child, Gloria, who came over here when she was so very young. I have oftentimes materialized to my husband who comes to this medium's seances, and I am always rejoiced at any opportunity which affords our meeting and greeting each other. I oftentimes come to him at home, bringing little Gloria with me, but he cannot see us, though sometimes he is conscious of my presence there. Little Winnie Weston comes now and says, "Tell my husband, Mr. Seymour, that she is very happy here in this lovely world. My sincere love and regard for all my friends on earth. I am very truly, Mrs. Mattie Seymour, love, the being of all life. Lord Noel Gordon Byron. Love is the wondrous power that is the being of all life, the center of all activity. Although the world does not know love, it is yet ruling her forces day by day. As you of the earth look out on the broad expanse of earth's treasures, do you behold what is there? An illimitable blessedness of possessions all for man's great use, and planted there by the hand of God for man's use and his manifold benefits. What caused and what causes God to bestow upon his people such abundance? The one answer is his marvelous and unchangeable love. So when a refreshing shower of spring falls on the fevered earth, and all the limp and famishing flowers hold up their heads once more, just remember that love was nestling close in the raindrops and cooling and kissing the flowers out again. When once you know that love exists everywhere in the universe, in earth and in heaven, then will you come to understand how wonderful is God, for God is love. And love is not a selfish attachment one for another, but it is a strength, a power that is ever present, ever powerful to suffer long and be kind, to sacrifice and be constant, to forbear and wait, to smile and hide the sorrow, to forgive, to shelter and to give life. Love is the powerful and mighty force controlling the elements. Watch the wonder-working storm, the brilliant lightning as she darts her fiery arms across the black-breasted heavens. How she curves and circles her love-light body and winding her diamond-glinted arms about the waiting skies as she fondles and adores the wonderful heavens. Humanity cannot get away from love if it will. For love is the inborn, inbred principle of life on which all creatures subsist. God, the unchangeable whole, instills divinity into a mother's heart, when she refuses to part with her tender offspring. And in the heart of all lovers doth he fix his mighty presence when that mysterious whispering of strange and musical voices begins to tell of a devotion that sits high above the greedy world and reigns on a throne all emerald and gold. God's presence is wholesome and mighty in such places. I have seen two lovers strolling out in the green and leafy presence of the breathless summer's evening, out in the mystical sighing stillness of the glory and rapture and fullness of love. Love's clothing shimmered all about them, clung around them in the purple glory of the fading day, and the rapture of their faces was lost in the growing shadows of the sultry night. God was with them, beaming in their love, in their hearts laughing. I see them wander on in the drooping curtains of the dusky night, and all the lusciousness of the aura of their presence is hidden in the mask of day, the welcome night. Within their hearts is burning all the purity and sacrifice of life, and all for each are there. Within their souls is born the noblest principles of which man ever dreamed or that angel lived. For it is the all-powerful influence that changes these two creatures into beings of delightful rapture, into all the graces at once, the influence of the world's or heaven's greatest thing, love. It is a power of such potency that men will conquer a nation in battle under the protection of its mighty arm. All the great and heroic acts of old were based upon the promptings of love. The eternal plan is impregnated with it, and underlying every action of man, love lies, though it may be oftentimes asleep. But once aroused, awakened and set into being, it is able to move the world. No man or woman, it makes no difference how far either of them may have fallen in the moral scale, is or can be devoid of love. There is a vibratory chord somewhere in his or her being that when touched will be found to connect with a world of stifled tenderness, and there will, once probed, will pour out its richness in abundance if you but afford the opportunity. Love, live and laugh, without these the soul must die. But with them ever present, the soul will delve daily into an unceasing supply of the richest spiritual and material blessings. A message from a wife to her husband. Rosa Miller. About 2 weeks ago I promised my husband I would dictate something for the book, and now as the doctor has so kindly permitted me, I will gladly do so. When I first came to the spirit world they took me to a large, beautiful place of rest, which you on earth would call a hospital, for I had suffered much before, and at the time of passing, and it was very necessary that I should go into a place of retirement and stay a short space of time before entering upon any active duties in spirit life. I found the life much different from what I had pictured it, as I found that each and every one had a special work to do, and we are not always and forever singing and playing upon golden harps. Each one follows here the pursuit to which his or her soul inclines, and so every soul thus finds its happiness.